Extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer. Four teams left, MLS Cup playoffs. Check off the conference semifinals. We're on to the conference finals. Hell is indeed real. Cincinnati, Columbus, LAFC, Houston, all coming up next Saturday on MLS season pass. Just three games left. That's it.
Get hyped.
How hyped were you during these games, Dave? I mean, you were so hyped, you were doing what while watching?
Just locked in, taking notes.
Yeah, and just notes.
You want to see my notes? I've got notes. You think I don't take notes during games?
I'm sure you have notes.
Yeah, I had a puzzle out because it's Thanksgiving weekend, so you throw out a puzzle. So just like working on it half times in between games. Easier yesterday because no PKs in the extra time in the first game. So there was a gap. Got to fill the gap, you know? Can't lose momentum. So I come off Cucho and Christian Ramirez, and I go straight into a puzzle of food on a diner counter. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, someone find me French fries because I've got 18 pieces of French fries and I'm not finding the one
Seattle
I need.
Seattle Sounders missing corner pieces. No cornerstones left.
Wow.
Sorry, I apologize. All right, we will get into all the conference semifinals in the Eastern Conference. Cincinnati, thanks to a controversial goal, beat Philly 1-0, reversed the scoreline from last year. Columbus marching on. Took more than 90 minutes, had to go to extra time, but they knocked off Orlando 2-0 in the West. LAFC, 1-0 winners thanks to Denny Bawanga's 37th goal in all competitions against the Seattle Sounders, who now have at least the top-end rebuild coming in the offseason. And the Houston Dynamo march on 1-0 thanks to playoff Franco Escobar with the header to beat Sporting Kansas City. We will take a first look at the conference finals, go through every single storyline for every single team, and promise not to talk about puzzles anymore.
So Franco Escobar has won more trophies than Dairon Asprilla. Is he the Robert Horry of Major League Soccer at this point?
I had not considered that possibility.
Yeah. There are a few other people in this convo, I think.
I mean,
isn't Darlington Nagbe?
Oh, interesting. Well, but he's a better player.
Yeah. Robert Horry was a really good player.
Yeah, but not.
Not Nagbe. Like, yeah. That's fair.
DP contract for Nagbe. Oh. So technically top three on
his team.
Let's
mold this one over. All right. Saturday. Coverage starts 5:30.
I think Stephen Betashore has a shout, too. He was on a bunch of good teams, moved around to a bunch of good teams. Are you trying to stay on track?
No. I'm fine to sidetrack here. I would go for a Devin Booker joke, but all my group chat Devin Booker jokes were just...
You still kept shooting them.
Yeah. I had to bring it back, you know, chuck it up there. Coverage, Saturday, starts on MLS Season Pass at 5:30 in studio. Kaylin Kyle hosting, myself, BWP, Sasha Kleshchen. We'll watch that Cincinnati-Columbus game together and then switch over to the LAFC Houston stream at 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. Full hour reaction, then post-game into LAFC Houston, and then we'll know... Who's playing an MLS Cup? We do know we're going to the state of Ohio.
Is there a song about Ohio?
I mean, there is. It's not a great
song. No, it's not a good song. It's not a great MLS Cup song. Yeah. It's not a fun song. It is the center of soccer right now. And I think we've talked
about
this.
Always has been.
Always has been. We've talked about this a lot this year, though, of these two clubs, what they've built, the way they've built it in different ways, but also similar at the same time. But this is also lasting. Right, these are two clubs that I think are going to be sort of the difference makers in the Eastern Conference. A lot of things are going to go through Ohio over the next 10 years. Crew obviously have had in the past with hosting the U.S. men's national team for huge games, and then the history they've had under Ziggy Schmidt and then under Caleb Porter and Greg Berhalter. I don't know why I did it in that order, but I did. But like, this is really cool. And I could say from the youth level down, because I cover that as well, both these clubs are doing some really good stuff, and they're changing, I think, the perception of what you can accomplish in whatever market. Of like, if you are smart and good, your fans are going to interact with you, and you can be a big club in MLS however you choose to be.
I'm still reeling from the Robert Warzyha eraser.
Yeah,
that's tough for me. I can't.
Warzyha out on a lot of tweets back in the day.
Wow. Okay. You guys want to dive in? What's the best thing you saw from the conference semifinals? Dave, get us started.
Well, I'll just stick with the same thing, which is Cucho's goal celebration. And I made a joke online, like he was walking a bit at the end. Fair. He had played a lot of minutes. They weren't really going to sub him. You want him on the field. You want the ball to his feet. He handles the goal really well. He shuts the door. At that point, the game's over. They're up a man. They go up 2-0. They're going to a conference semifinals. So then he makes
conference
the
final. Yeah.
conference finals. Yeah, of course. Yeah. And then he makes the 50, 60 yard run to the corner, shirt off, celebrating in front of the fans. He is the star player of the team. And it was a slight shift. He got there. He fit in well. Zellerion has had his moments, of course. Then Zellerion gets sold, and Cucho has elevated in every single way you'd ask of him, both on the ball and off the ball. Like, it feels like he's the personality that helps drive that team forward in big ways. And there's a lot of trust from him with the teammates, with his teammates, and of course, obviously with the coaching staff and with him. So it felt like a really good moment overall for the club, for the history, for what they've done, and for the way they've pushed things. Like I just said, these two teams, them and Cincinnati, have had done things different in similar ways. This is a huge expenditure. He was a big time signing.
Yeah.
Last year when they were at their bottom too, it wasn't, okay, we're one piece away. It was like, we think that this is the growth and how it will work. We think it'll help last season, but it was clearly a future move. And they made it at the right time in a big way with a big time player. You could argue the best player left in this postseason, but we can have that argument. I think each team has a player that they like to throw up there. And so I just think to finish it off that way with the struggle that they had, and then a few moments of insecurity at the back, and then Cucho puts that final nail in the coffin, sprints to the corner, an all-time celebration. All those photos are going to be up in the stadium for the rest of the time. It was just cool.
It's the expenditure, but then it's also all the work that goes into convincing a player at that point in their career that this is the right place to be. So it's expenditure on the fee, but also on the stadium, because you probably need that piece, and then also on the training facility that they built, and also on the fact that he's going to join Zellerion. And then, Wilfred Nancy wasn't around. So it wasn't like, hey, we're selling you on this beautiful style of play. It was, come to Columbus, Ohio, you potential Colombian international who's trying to break into that team and now has broke into that team.
Maybe he thought it was the same place. I'm close to the national team.
I mean, Tim Bezpachinko, you just can't, you can't say that name enough when you're talking about the way clubs are built and some of the best clubs in this league over the past decade or so. Best thing you saw, Doyle?
Same game. Man, I feel bad for Robin Jansen, but like, he had, through 90 minutes, he had one of the best performances I've ever seen from a center back in the playoffs. Like, he was everywhere, putting out fires, initiating attacks. Not that Orlando's attackers did anything with it, but it was just...
Took that shot at halftime from 45 yards out. He's like, no one else is going to.
I thought he was so good. It was like the definition of valiant in defeat, like the exact type of performance you want from your veteran leader on the back line. And it like kind of validated, I felt like it validated my defender of the year vote. Like, this is what I've been seeing from this guy all year long. And if you're an Orlando City fan, obviously you're kind of heartbroken after that one, but man, all the pieces are there. And they already have an open DP slot heading into next year. We're going to get into more of this later, but like, run it all back. Run it all back and go really freaking big on a number 10, a guy who can be the best player on a field in a game like this one, who could do for your team. I mean, different type of player than Cucho, but who could be that guy for Orlando that Cucho is for Columbus.
My favorite moment was when Cucho comes across the box and his first touch pops up on him a little, but not super high.
Yeah.
And Cucho's clean where he'll strike anything. Yeah. Anything near him, he can get a
clean.
He had
11 shots in this.
Yeah, and it's clean contact every time.
I feel like seven of them were blocked.
It's also most of them are blocked.
It's also both feet with him.
But so that one pops up as he's moving away, and Jansen still gets the block in coming across. No foul, no attempt at a foul. Like, he's not even close, but he gets that block in where he reads the play perfectly. If he gets it wrong and Cucho cuts, he's one-on-one with the goalkeeper, but he doesn't get it wrong. And it was like, that felt like one of those moments where it's like, oh, Columbus about to break through. And Jansen had another block in him where you're like, oh my God.
It was a block party for Orlando. I mean, Dagger Dan had a sick one on Angulo, a couple other big ones. I have to throw this out there. There's only one place I can empty this. It's either in the group chat or on ETR. Is Rodrigo Schlegel the Argentine Aurelien Colen? Just in style of play, in facial expressions, in like baffling decisions, and the fact that he just has to be on a yellow card early in big matches because he has to unnecessarily cut through someone and then pull someone out of the open field. I mean, all his mannerisms, I'm just like, Aurelien Colen, Aurelien Colen, Aurelien Colen. And then Robin Jansen is sort of like Matt Beisler in a way. Controls the game with the ball.
He's having a great time coming off the Houston SKC series.
Oh, man.
It feels like, 23 again.
Oh, yeah. What do you think? Is that off?
No, it's...
Am I stretching?
Schlegel's a worse player.
Yeah,
Schlegel's not
as good. Yeah. Cullen, 10 years ago when he was at his apex in MLS, was like one of the three or four best center backs in the league. And Schlegel is...
Not.
I think if Orlando are going to compete next year, the two places in this lineup they need to upgrade are the number 10 and that right center back. And like, if you can keep Schlegel and Antonio Carlos and like have that kind of depth, that is great. But like getting a guy who can, you know, be what Aurelien Coelen was for that Sporting KC title team.
It's the mannerisms. It's the,
no, I mean, the mannerisms.
He plays on the edge.
Yeah. I'm also just laughing because Bradley Wright Phillips and Sasha Kljestan, who were teammates with Aurelien Coelen for a little bit, they were telling some stories,
some great
in the green room that are not able to be shared on this family friendly.
Well, also, and the flip side was that some could be because he is a great guy. And I also one of the moments of the semifinals for me is Aurelien Coelen in orange dapping up Dynamo players after beating Kansas City in the playoffs, and my mind was just
victorious.
Just like, oh my god, things have changed.
Absolutely. And we see that as it goes along. Schlegel starts a game on the edge. So he's already off it by the time the 100%. Ball starts getting kicked. And he shot himself in the foot again. But I think that almost all actually the red card almost covers how much he struggles in the team. And unfortunately for Orlando, their need to have him in there. And partially, I think Oscar Pereja, and we'll talk about Pereja more, wanting him in there. It feels like they didn't replace that spot or upgrade that spot because he believes in Schlegel in that spot. And Schlegel is a good third center back in Major League Soccer. They would have CB depth.
Hey, CB depth.
That's Weeby's preseason pick right there.
Schlegel in the playoffs is, it's a lot. From playing goalkeeper and saving penalties to running next to Cucho Hernandez on a yellow and being like, don't pull him down. Don't pull him down. Don't pull him down. Oh, I just pulled him down.
Was it a second yellow or straight red?
Second yellow.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, that's stopping a promising attack. I don't think you could call that dogs.
I don't think it was dogs.
You're not in possession. The ball's far away, but it's very clearly a second yellow.
Schlegel still got it done.
It's like, don't do it, dude. Don't do it. Don't do it. And then he does it. All right. Best thing I saw.
No, it wasn't Cucho. It was Rossi.
Was it?
Yeah, because Cucho played the ball.
Oh, well, you're right. My best.
He's the best player on the field.
Brilliant pass. Dude's so good.
Yeah.
Dynamo crowd was awesome.
To throw it back
10 years to like the opening
Robertson, baby.
Yeah. Or even like the opening of what was then BBVA and now is, you know, Shell is Hell is Shell. Hell in the Shell.
Hell in the Shell.
Hell in the Shell. Yeah. Shell Energy. They were packed.
You didn't
want
to get stuck in a Kalen Kyle, which is Hell is Hot.
Yeah.
It's a good line. Hell is fire. Kalen, I hell appreciate fire that line. Yeah.
No, with like all the, you had the streamers, you had the fans going crazy. It didn't look like there was an empty seat in the house. And these are sort of the moments that you're waiting for in Houston, where it's a big
deliver for the people market, who come out.
A ton of soccer fans there. Achi Achi comes and you think, okay, is this going to make the change? But you got to win. And they have turned that stadium into a fortress and they won yet another playoff game. And they're in a conference final in a year that nobody expected them to be there. Yeah. The end of 2022 was depressing. Mm-hmm. It was like this project that was supposed to be a fresh start is literally collapsing in front of our eyes. And for Ben Olsen to come in and Pat Onstad to get some moves right, the biggest one hiring Ben Olsen, and to have Achi Achi's mind sort of shift and his engagement go from wavering to the very, very top level.
Like the epitome of what you want from a captain.
It's so fun to watch. And they play fun. It was tiki-taka.
Amazing.
Beautiful possession soccer off the jump. And, you know, Kalen Carr's got to be happy.
Kalen Carr
handed Kansas City a playoff loss.
He was at his happiest last night in the green room for the first 5-10 minutes, however long we were talking about Achi Achi, sitting around the table, you know, watching the game. And just all of us were marveling at the fact that Achi Achi takes free kicks and corner kicks with both feet. If he's on the right side, he'll take it with his left foot. If he's on the left side, he'll take it with his right foot. And, you know, again, I'm sitting around there with like former professional players, including, you know, Sasha's played 30 odd times in the Champions League. We all know Bradley Wright Phillips' resume and obviously Kalen, multiple MLS Cups and, you know, good.
One of the best men's league players in New York when he's healthy.
Don't tell my team that. They're mad at Kalen right now. We'll get into it.
And Achi Achi lines up for the corner kick that becomes the eventual game winner, and he's like, he's taking a left foot. Kalen's like losing his mind. He's taking a left footed. We said it, he's taking a left. He's already taken like three right footed ones, and they were all dimes on this one. He puts it, and like it ends up being the Escobar goal. And Kalen does that thing where he like stands up and like walks away, head like hands on head, like walks around the table. That was actually the best thing I saw in the playoffs. Like Kalen being like that amazed and it brought me back to the old studio.
I was gonna say there's nothing better than watching elimination, playoff, high level soccer with a bunch of people that care about it at the same level that you do.
Yeah.
It just, there's nothing.
Also, I think since we've worked with Kalen, Houston won an Open Cup, but besides that, I don't think any of the teams he played for have like been competitive, really.
No, yeah, Chicago Fire.
Schweinsteiger year. Yeah.
He's had to sit at this table and apologize for teams he has nothing to
I
do
with. I forgot he
teams.
Played for something because we just never talked about him.
The other thing I will say, and we don't really have a spot to get to this with Kansas City, the story about Kansas City turning their team around because their owners sent them to the ranch to, quote, burn it down was amazing. Like, I wouldn't send Johnny Russell anywhere with an open bar and be like, do what you want. It seems like a bad choice. And apparently they destroyed a bunch of taxidermy and other property on this ranch. But it worked.
Didn't one of them walk on Daniel Shalloway's car one time and break the windshield?
Yeah, I think that's right.
And that was like not even trying to break anything.
Yeah, that was a chuckle. That was a chuckle. Well, after the St. Louis series, I don't know if you saw like all the footage afterwards. Of course, there was a long break, but it was the whole team doing shots in the locker room.
Ooh.
If you're not 21, don't do that. But yeah, well, as a celebratory
it was body
gesture,
armor, but yeah.
Yeah, it was, I mean, just a cool image and one that's like, oh, yeah, I think they did that earlier. By the way, there's a replica of the Wheel at this ranch, which is the most famous college bar in Lawrence County.
I was going to say, what's the Wheel?
Yeah. Boy. Nobody cares about that but me and like eight other people who are Jayhawks grads. But that is sick.
Joel Wiebe's listening to this.
He's locked in.
I love the Wheel.
He wishes he was a Jayhawk grad. He wishes. All right, let's get to it. Cincinnati, Philly in the Eastern Conference. Should we just start with the goal and the decision? Get that out of the way?
Yeah.
Get to the game?
Yep.
So in the 94th minute, it's 0-0. Looks like we're going to extra time. We're all sitting in the green room like, all right, 30 more minutes. Not ideal because this has not been the prettiest game of all time. Free kick comes in. Ian Murphy in acres of space. Nice little cushion header back across to the top of the 6-yard box. And Jerson Mascara looks like the striker the Sounders wish they had. A delicate cushion touch. With his left foot, right foot, strikes across the ball. Beautiful bottom corner goal. But is it offside? And naked eye on the broadcast, straight up, looked offside.
I thought it looked a little bit offside, but it was close. And like I felt that way because I understand angles. And there are a lot of people on social media who do not understand angles, apparently.
No.
And thought it was like a mile offside.
And I was going to say, I've been fooled before.
Yeah.
I've done this for years, looking at offside calls with this exact camera angle and thinking to myself, that's for sure offside. But I've learned there's no way that's clear and obvious in the moment. Certainly not for an AR looking down that line. As we found out later, our friend Soccer Photogrammetry came on and did his whole trigonometry thing. And it was 3 inches or so.
That's
now, look.
Said, yeah. Well, yeah. That's what they said.
Yeah. I want everyone who's nice listening to this. If you have a ruler, great. If you don't, try to imagine how big 3 inches is. Use your hand. I mean, we're talking about less than the length of a normal adult's finger. It's a child's index finger, basically.
This is one of the best segments we've ever done.
It's nothing. It's nothing.
We're trying to explain 3 inches. Yeah,
now try to look down a line in live play as an AR. You tell me, if that's the margin, are you going to put your flag up? Hell no. That flag is staying down in the age of video review every single time, and that is the right thing to do.
So that's what's baked into the system now.
Yeah. Right.
Right? Because like we have decided, and we meaning collectively everyone who watches and cares about soccer in the world, we have all decided that the worst thing is for
a good goal
to be chalked off by an eager flag. Right? And so in this day and age, and we see it around the world, you keep the flag down because it all is going to go to review. And in this case, it looks like the review said, yeah, it's not clear and obvious. Like there's no angle that shows that this is obviously a mistake. Now, if the flag had come up, it wouldn't have been given. It would have been like, yeah, there's no clear and obvious way to say that this should have been a goal.
Now remember, the AR can leave it down in the moment, yep, and then once the goal is scored and the play is completed, raise the flag and offside can be given. The AR didn't do that.
No.
So, and look, I'm chatting with the AR, but to me, that says the AR looked down that line and said, for me, this is onside, which I think is a completely reasonable decision to make. And the positioning is very, very good. Then you go to the angle. And if you're a VAR up there, come on, it's got to be clear and obvious.
Yeah,
there's be like, I just got hit over the head with a frying pan, and that is offside.
And a lot of people are like, well, just send it down and have the referee go look. Now you're just re-refereeing the game on the video, and what you see, again, is not clear and obvious.
No.
So the referee would go look at it and not be able to make the judgment. I think also one of the things on the thread is Carranza's foot is behind Ian Murphy, and so the AR is somewhat blocked from seeing Carranza as well, as is the video. Like, we cannot see Carranza's foot because, remember, his arm does not keep a player on side because it's not a legal position. So the foot is what you're looking at. You cannot see the foot. Mm-mm. And I believe they went through 3 or 4 different angles and couldn't find it.
And there's not a perfect angle. Those yelling, hey, I'd love to see straight down the line. Yeah, yo, me too. I would too. But that angle doesn't exist.
120 yards.
Yeah.
So if we had 120cameras at every yard,
you have to use the tools in place.
Yeah.
I thought the referees did a good job in this instance. I understand why Philly would be frustrated and aggrieved. I get why people would be in my mention saying, well, 3 inches is still offside.
Yep.
Again, I would ask you to just take a look at 3 inches and ask yourself whether that is the difference between the Philadelphia Union advancing or whether it's that Uwe couldn't make the right run, score a goal, whether they didn't create chances.
Yeah.
It could be both. It could, but come on, it's 3 inches. You're telling me there's not another call in this game that has that same?
So, I mean, the real question is then, do you want to go to the system that they use in like the Premier League or the World Cup where you automatically have the review with the line and the line goes straight up in the air and then they do the silhouette of the player? I kind of hate that. I do not like that. I think this system is the system that we have in MLS. I like it better. I will admit though that I'm a neutral.
Yeah.
I don't like it. I think if I was a Philadelphia Union fan, I would be raging this year.
It changes your perspective.
Yeah.
Having a rooting interest. I honestly don't care that much about the line or the no line. I just think execute whatever process you have and know that no matter what it is, people are going to complain.
Well, I mean, and that's the thing, right? And we saw last
even
month
with the line, people just Premier League, this is too close. This isn't fair. You're measuring on the wrong point. It's like,
What was the game they botched? The Liverpool one? Yeah, the Liverpool
one. That was a VAR botch because they didn't know the actual play that happened.
Right.
So they reviewed the wrong play.
So in this one, the execution, it was correct. Yeah, it was correct for the call that was made.
I
prefer that we err on the side of giving the goal.
Agreed. Rather than tie should go to a runner.
Yeah.
You want attack, you want offense, right? If it's close, it should be a goal.
Yeah.
Now, I can understand for Philly saying we're going home. I think you're right, which is if I was a Philly fan or part of the Philadelphia Union, I would be screaming bloody murder, but you lost the game and that's not the only reason why. And I'm of the opinion that overall calls come back around.
Yeah.
They all split even over the course of time for most teams and players and whatever. If you choose to initiate
the game.
Unless you
have Giorgio Chiellini on your team.
Of course. If you choose to initiate the game, though, and I think that's sort of the other part. It took Philly a while to get into this game. They were almost blown off the field in the first 15 or so minutes. Then they started to settle in. Then they started to find their feet. The thing that stood out to me, and I was texting someone about this, is they only had one player to get them into transition correctly, and that was McGlynn. And that's the part that hurt about this Philly team was I talked for 2-3 weeks about losing Miazga, and they ended up losing Nwobodo as well, and how it will open this team up. And you've got the two forwards and how the runs can be made. Now Mosquera has to slide over. You have Alvis Powell in there and Gattis as well. They were not able to find Carranza and Ura quickly enough in the dangerous channels for Gazdag to make the second run for them to create their scoring chances unless they got the ball to McGlynn's foot. And I thought Cincinnati did a good job of surrounding McGlynn and making him play, whether it was negative, whether it was sideways, to not let him break them down. Jose Martinez never stepped up and had that moment. Bedoya doesn't really do that for this team, and Gazdag's not really capable of it. And that was the thing for Philly that I think you walk away from. And you obviously have this pressing system, you have this style. You need someone else in there who can also play with the ball. It can't all fall on McGlynn's shoulders. It has been Kai Wagner at times. I don't know if that would have been...
It was Jakob Glesnes, too.
Yeah,
if you look back at Philly at their best, a lot of it was originating with Jakob Glesnes. Damian Lowe had a pretty good game, I thought. he
defensively.
He is a third center back. You know, he's not a guy who in this day and age, I think, is a starter for a team that is seriously amongst the favorites to win MLS Cup. And that's the difference.
Yeah.
I mean, they just don't. Gazdag's not going to be a creator. So if you can slow down McGlynn and you don't have Wagner to be either a creator via early crosses or set pieces, all of a sudden those moments where we see Ua and Carranza at their best, where they're sort of combining, or that second ball is coming in, or the cutback is there for Gazdag, just don't exist. We'll get into the future for the Union in a second, but this is a huge win for Cincinnati under some circumstances that were challenging.
Yeah.
No Wobodo, man. I mean, we knew Miazga was going to be out, but Wobodo was training at what degree we didn't really know. And then to not even make the bench, to have Santi Arias on the bench as well. Alvis Powell plays right center back, Gaddis on the right at right wing back, which is the opposite of what I thought that they would do, but ended up working out for Pat Noonan. Yuya Kubo comes in and plays a wonderful game in Wobodo's stead. His career arc is insane. Yeah,
what a wild, like
designated player. Was going
to be a DP attacker, forward? And now he's, yeah.
Yeah, now he's like a box-to-box reserve, played 1,100 minutes the entire season for the Shield-winning team.
Yeah.
It's nutty.
Yeah, it's wild. I think it's a huge credit to Cincinnati for what they've built, that it is more than the individuals. It is a system, and they are a team that was pretty healthy this year. They obviously had the Brenner in and out and Bupenza come in. But besides that, like, most of this group played every single game. And so for them to be able to step up in a moment like this and cover, you look back on some of the big moments for other teams that have won things, and they have a game or two where you have to go to the emergency reserves and someone else has to step up all of a sudden. And that's a credit to what Pat Noonan has built in this team. I think it's a huge credit to Lucho Acosta, who I didn't think was very good in this game, but no. Is a leader on this team and has set a tone that everyone else follows. And so I think when you talk about that forward, I mean, Celentano's 22.
Yes.
Mascara's 21. Yeah. Like, that was the spine of this team in this moment. And they held together against one of the teams that's been one of the better teams over the course of time. That's been there before. That's the other part, was like, Cincinnati was at an experienced disadvantage in this game. The game didn't play out that way. It didn't look like it later on.
So the experienced disadvantage, it's there, but they've narrowed the gap considerably in the past 12 months. Like, they made a run in the playoffs last year. They made a run in the League's Cup this year. They made a run in the Open Cup. So they've accrued a lot of elimination game know-how over the past year. And they look like it. They didn't look like an experience gap in this one. What there looked like was a talent gap. And since they have now gone through two rounds, and we know what playing the Red Bulls is like, and Philadelphia is a better soccer playing team than the Red Bulls, but they didn't really do much of that in this one for the reasons we just delineated, missing their best ball progressors and their best chance creator. So this one turned into a knife fight as well. And since he's like, we can do that, but also we have guys who can beat you. We have guys who can play soccer while they're doing that. And they didn't show their best in that regards, but like, it was there. And then when it came time at the end to make a winning play, they had, was it Barriel served in the cross?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, it's Barriel who served in the cross, because it was a quick free kick from Lucho to Barriel. Yeah. And it was just a heady play by Lucho to take it quick while the Union were still organizing, and Barriel sends in the cross, and then you have two giant center backs in there, and Mascara's, like, his diving gets to me. I hate the play.
Yeah, the Carranza one is infuriating.
But he's a fantastic player. Mm-hmm. He's a fantastic player.
Credit to Cincinnati. You can talk about the top-end talent, the Bupenzas, the Luchos, the Barriales, but I think Barriel is sort of in the same camp as Mascara, which is, came as an unfinished product, and that was Mascara when he arrived. Really didn't have a ton of games under his belt. In Colombia, Wolves buys him early. He's not ready for Wolves. And had some bumps early in the season.
Definitely.
Like, was not the most mature player. I thought there was a great write-up on all this in The Athletic. I'd recommend you go read that. But to get him to a point over the course of a year to where Matt Miazga's out and you trust him in the middle of that back three with Haglund out as well, with Alvis Powell and Ian Murphy, and he steps up and performs in that moment, not just physically, tactically, but also emotionally, because that's been at times where he's struggled, where he's just like over the top with his reactions. When Matt Miazga's calming you down, you know, you got to like, whoa, take a step back, bro. It was the moment, like the moment you need him, and he stepped up.
Yeah, and I don't think you can stress enough without Nwobodo in there, right? Without the guy who sets the tempo. And
weirdly, they're 5-0-0 without Nwobodo.
Yeah, which is bizarre. Strange. Yeah,
and now 4-2-2 without Matt Miazga, I believe.
So maybe both of them are bad.
I mean, it speaks to the job Chris Albright has done in building this roster, and then the job Pat Noonan has done in getting improvement out of guys who have talent. Barrel was he was just kind of a talented kid, positionless. Now he's the best attacking left wing back or left back in the league. Obviously, Mascara, we just talked about how he's grown over the... I mean, even older guys like Lucho Acosta grew a ton over the course of the past 2 years. Getting a coach who can do that, who can get the big egos of established stars, because managing that is like the number one thing. It's more important than tactics. It's more important than player development. Managing the egos of your biggest player, I maintain, is the most important thing a coach can do. And obviously, Pat Noonan can do that. But at the same time, on a granular level, he's getting young players to improve, not just over a course of an offseason, but like week to week. These guys have gotten better to the point where you have Ian Murphy's a second year player. Nobody rated him that highly coming out of Duke. And Mascara, super rated very highly, but like super immature. Alvis Powell, it's a right back his entire career. That's your starting back line in front of a 22-year-old goalkeeper.
Both super draft picks last year.
Brandon Vasquez, you probably got to throw in this as well.
Yeah, for sure. Plus the high-end Brenner.
Yeah. High-end spin, too. I mean, Aaron Bupinza had a strange and one mixtape game where he was just like, I'm going to try all the stuff. But like probably at the wrong times and not make the right decisions.
That's going to be that's going to be a big challenge for Pat Noonan.
I was thinking during this game, and as Pat, you know, the connection with Pat and then Jim Curtin, I think Jim Curtin's looking across the line at the spin, at some of the things that they're doing as far as player acquisition and being a little bit jealous.
I think if Curtin felt that way, then he would be announced this month as the Chicago Fire head coach, right? Because like he has Fire ties, obviously. He played there for a long time, and the Fire spend. And so if Curtin wanted that, he would have ended up being in Chicago.
Noonan's got his number right now. The only loss Noonan has taken to Philly and Jim Curtin was in last year's playoffs. It's the 1-0 from Leon Flock. But big win. Cincinnati marching on. Any concern for them at all just because it didn't look pretty? And like you think Shield and... I think best team in the league, and sometimes you just want it to look pretty.
At this point, no, because they've gotten this far that way, and they will host throughout. So the atmosphere is phenomenal. It pushes them on, right? They are making the plays in the 90 plus minute that Philly's not. And I don't see anyone really else out there that's so dominant right now. So they're the favorites to win MLS Cup. And they got through the hardest moment, which was the defender of the year was suspended. So Nwobodo, we're not sure if he'll come back, but you know Matt Miazga will be back for the next game. And so if that's the case, you've gotten better and you got through this experience against a team that's been there and has that experience and all those things. So yeah, you would like for it to look more like it looked like at times throughout this regular season, although it hasn't looked super pretty a lot this year.
Yeah.
And it didn't work for them in the Open Cup semifinal to sort of open up and play a little bit more. So I think they'll be okay with where they stand. And this is the reality of the playoffs, right? Let's look back at LAFC last year. Like they scored in the final. They had to come from behind. They had to win in penalties off a deflected free kick, a header off a set piece, and a last second header from Gareth Bale. Like it's not easy, and no one will remember what it looks like if you win. So
that
I think they're fine.
Next week at home against the Crew, like the Crew are playing great soccer. They're a great team. Wouldn't shock me at all if they win. The Crew let you play.
100%.
Philly, Red Bull, they don't let you play. And like, credit to Cincy for surviving the gauntlet. But this coming weekend is going to be more about soccer and less about pure survival.
It's going to be fun.
It's
going to be amazing.
It's a gift. It's an absolute gift. Again, for neutrals, if you have a Philly rooting interest, you're just like us again. But for those of us that like Hell is Real, should be really fun.
It's going to be fire and it's going to be hot.
It's all the things. What's Philly missing? What were they missing yet again?
Top-end quality. You know, obviously Glesnes, Wagner, those guys would have helped a ton. I don't think their attacking trident is as good as Cincinnati's attacking trident. I don't think Gazdag is really a match winner in the way the top tens in this league are
certainly not winner. At Lucho's level. Now, there's an announcement in Cincinnati today. We're recording before that happens. I would expect
what could it
that
be?
Means that Lucho is the MVP.
Yeah.
So Uwa was very disappointing.
Uwa last year, he had 3 goals and 6 assists and like, or 4 assists in like 1600 minutes. Like, he was, the ROI in Uwa last year was really high. This year, I think he had like 11 goals in 2900 minutes across all competition.
There were a lot of moments when it didn't seem like Jim wanted to play him, where he was just sort of like,
I mean, that was
frustrated, burying him. And in this game, there are a couple moments like, dude, you're the like line stretching nine. Carranza can be the one that can drop back in for the cutback. You have to make the nine run. Like, just run through the back of the net if you have to. And then the ball goes across the box and he's standing in the same space as Carranza. Or just doesn't have that final touch or quality in the moments when you're like, this is it. You're in behind. They need you to finish this one to take the steps that this club wants to take. And it didn't happen. And Carranza wasn't sharp either. Like, to be fair, he had a hamstring injury. He comes back off that. He wasn't sharp. And you don't have your best chance creator. So, yeah, it's a bummer.
Yeah, it is. And it's, again, for Philly, bumping up against that same issue over and over of one more difference maker, one more chance creator. I talked about that possession player as well, whether it's in midfield or coming out of the back line or whatever it is. It'll be interesting to see where they go from here, because you talk about Gazdag. You could slide Gazdag higher. The assumption being, if Carranza leaves and they sell Carranza, they've already brought in Ty Baribo, who I assume is supposed to be part of the solution.
He's played 150 minutes.
Right, but this is a club that has done this in the past, and then it's worked later on, right? Gazdag year one was a train wreck, then year two, he was an MVP candidate for them and their leading scorer. So I don't think they would spend that money on someone they don't expect to be a part of that solution, but it will be tough to see him do it with Uwa. So do you push Gazdag higher? Do you go out and get a 10, another player in midfield who can play with the ball? It feels unlikely that they will do something like that. They will probably lean even heavier into the system and try and find that next generation of players to come through. And that's going to be Philly's story over and over, unless they choose to level up. And that's what Cincinnati did, right? Cincinnati leaned into the system. They were able to improve players like Nick Hagelin and bringing in Murphy along and all these things. And they spent millions of dollars on Nwobodo and now on Bupenza after to replace
Penner. On extending Lucho as well?
Yep.
So it can't be one. If you want to be the best team in MLS, it has to be some mix of both. Philly is trying to push as hard as they can up against the line of just leaning in one way and being really good at it. But at some point, if you want to get to the highest level, you have to sort of take things on that other teams are doing.
Is the symbiotic relationship between Ernst Tanner, who was able to get players at a level of investment that didn't match their potential ability in the system under Jim Curtin, are there cracks in that relationship? Because Jim Curtin, after this match on Alejandro Bedoya's future, and remember, Ernst Tanner told Bedoya in a very brief conversation, hey, it's over. You're not coming back next year. Quote from Jim, Alejandro is bigger than anybody that's ever been at this club, myself included. He should 100% be back. His talk and play on the field speaks for itself. Anywhere in the world, the head coach would have a say with what happens with his captain. And then, of course, Instagram reporter, all of the Philadelphia Union players are like reposting these quotes. Ali should be back. This is crazy. I mean, these are veterans. These are not like nobody's in the squad. These are the core.
Yeah.
Oh, what do you, Andre, do you make of this?
Including Andre Blake, Denny Gazdag, and Baizo. It's interesting. I think it is Jim Curtin trying to push the envelope as much as he can publicly, of trying to continue to push for investment in his group and say, I can't always do it against the dollar. Also, I don't think Jim Curtin has a lot to lose here. Yeah. His players feel that way. This is me being cynical. You say what you say. You're not the decision maker. There's no sweat off your back. You come back next year without Bedoya and you say, yeah, guys, I fought for him too. I believe, like, you know, for him trying to set the tone in the locker room, it's probably not the worst thing to say. But we have seen Jim Curtin make statements like this over the course of time, of trying to push the people above him through the media at times to try and gain some sort of the advantages that LAFC and Cincinnati and these other teams have had against him over the last 2 years.
Ernst Tanner's recent transfer windows. Do you have faith, Doyle, that he'll be able to, I don't know if you want to call them miracles, but to make, you know, turn water into wine this offseason?
So his first transfer window, Jamiro Montero, very good signing. Matej Orovec, who was not a great signing. Jose Martinez, one of the all-time great signings. Got him for $300,000. Jakub Glesnes got him for an undisclosed fee. Fantastic signing at any price. Second window, Daniel Gazdag, great signing at the price. Leon Flock, great signing at the price. Stuart Finley, not a great signing. But, like, that's incredible.
If your hit rate is anywhere in that like 66 plus, two-thirds of your signings are very, very good. I mean, that's
if it's over 30%.
That's how you win Shields and are in MLS
especially
Cups
with the core he's now built.
Next window, Michael Ura, $2.5 million.
I think that's a fine signing, but it's a signing with a ceiling.
Yeah.
Right?
It doesn't raise the team's ceiling. It's just like he's an innings eater kind of guy. Jesus Bueno.
Baseball references.
Yeah, right? Jesus Bueno. Okay. Like that one might still come good. And then Julian Carranza, getting him from like that's a
steal.
So at this point, I mean, Ernst Tanner's not bad in 1,000 at this point, but like that's really, really good. Last winter, Andres Perea, Joaquin Torres, Damian Lowe, Richard Odata. The only one who cracked the rotation for meaningful minutes was Damian Lowe.
They loaned one out inside of MLS.
To a rival.
Yeah.
And then this summer, Olethu Makanya, who to be fair is very young. I don't think anybody expected him to play right away. And Ty Baribo, who they spent 1.4 million euros on. He played 155 minutes. Nothing in the past.
They also made a signing last week.
I missed that.
They signed a Danish U19 international.
Anyway, that wasn't going to help them this past
No, week. Not at all.
And the way I look at it, and I wrote when Philadelphia were eliminated in CCL play by LAFC, that I thought their winter window was unserious. It was not the winter window of a team that said, man, we were one player, one piece away from winning a double. And we could go out and we could climb that CCL mountain and plant our flag right there next to the Sounders. They did not have a window like that. They had a window where they were trying to rehabilitate sort of, you know, devalued assets, distressed assets in the midst of a championship roster like that. And they lost Corey Burke. And I know Corey Burke had a terrible year with the Red Bulls and he's not the greatest player in the world, but Corey Burke is the type of forward who can change a game like MLS Cup, which he did. If you look at that game before Corey Burke came on and after Corey Burke came on. So, look, Ernst Tanner has all the job security in the world and deserves it for what he did. But I could see exactly why, if, you know, David's wrong and this wasn't just a cynical ploy from Jim Curtin to keep a hold of the locker, I could see why there would be cracks between him and the coaching staff now, because the last two windows, when you are on the cusp of being a team that puts it all together, were awful. Awful windows.
I have to state, I thought that they had a decent transfer window when it happened and when we talked about them preseason, because I thought, listen, Damian Lowe has started now for playoff teams in back-to-back years. You complain about center back depth all the time.
They have it.
Andres Pereira he's not a U.S. men's national team player, but he's in the pool. Or he's an Olympic player. He played in this league.
Hey, promising young midfielder.
And one of their issues over the last year or two before that was depth of like not being able to cover for all the competitions. They covered to be able to be a home playoff team and make a CCL semifinal and make a Leagues Cup run. But they did not get a single additional difference maker. That was the one piece they didn't. So if they had made these moves and let's say Ty Baribo hit, or they had gone out and gotten one more piece at a higher level that helped, I think they would have had the right offseason, which was they needed to get deeper. Remember, they only made, one sub in MLS Cup last year until extra time when they brought in Paxton Aronson because Alejandro Bedoya was hurt. They didn't have a 12th or 13th player on that roster. They had that this year, but they did not add top-end talent. They did not add a difference maker.
$1.3 million total in GAM for Andres Perea and Joaquin Torres. Yeah. That's brutal.
Yeah. So can I throw a name out there?
Sure.
Nico Ladera. As a 10.
This is an off-season discussion. We got to move on to the rest of the...
The Nico Ladero convo
I'm here for that. We'll heat that back up later. I did just get word from Maria that we have additional time. this show. So let's not, we dragged that out pretty long. Let's try to stay on topic and on track.
We've got extra time.
I can't
believe you missed that one.
Orlando, Columbus. Orlando, it wasn't pretty. Let's just say that. We wanted more from them. We got what we wanted from the Crew, sans goals in regulation. But in the first little bit of extra time, here comes Christian Ramirez. He's been relegated to bench duty and off not used by the Crew since League's Cup. Hadn't scored since League's Cup.
Did you know that Christian Ramirez is a father?
Oh my God. Come on, let me get there. He has two
children. I'm surprised you didn't bring up Lucho crying on the field with his kids and his wife.
I don't want to cry on this show today, Dave. He might have three kids by now, Christian Ramirez, because after he scored, he said his wife was in labor. I guess on the third, you're just like, look, it's a playoff game, honey. Like, I know I've been playing that
much. Weeby's banking that for just in case. Well, KU's in the Elite Eight, third.
Mindy, big studio show. Look, if we hit that third, I've got some Clint Dempsey issues that I gotta handle. But
I don't even know what that means. But continue. You know,
let's congratulate the Crew, and then we'll get to Orlando. Man, they're so fun to watch.
Yep,
Adam Morris stepped up huge in a big moment yet again for this team. Wins the ball, plays the cross. The Christian Ramirez eventually bundles home with whatever body part it like bounced up and hit. But Adam Morris was an absolute. I mean, just he bossed this game. And when the Crew midfield is bossing games, odds are they're going to have the ball and they're going
to
win.
And let's contextualize it, right? Like, Wilder Cartagena is a full Peruvian internet. Like, we just saw him play against, Colombia? And I forget who else.
Bolivia.
He's playing every game for Peru in CONMEBOL.
Peru is right now is
no, not, no. But your point is correct.
Peru,
he's been a part of that team for a decade now. And I mean, Cesar Araujo is, he's on the cusp of the Uruguay national.
He's Messi's nemesis.
Yeah, at defensive, these are the guys that Aiden Morris and I have been guilty of. Underrating Adam Morris the past couple of years because I thought he was not good enough with the ball. And then I was a little disappointed by his reads and his repress earlier this season. I thought he has that Tyler Adams thing where he just sees the next defensive play earlier than I thought that was missing the first couple of months of this season. Man, is it not missing now? Because time after time after time, the Orlando deep-lying midfielders would get on the ball in what I thought was a good spot to progress upfield, and Morris would just ruin it. He would just absolutely ruin it. And then, obviously, the match-winning play is, there's a chance to get on the front foot and create a turnover as Orlando are trying to play out. And he not only creates the turnover, he gets on the ball again, and he provides the game-winning assist. This was a man's performance from Aiden Morris, man.
And he brought a level of nastiness that Columbus doesn't always have that Orlando was going to bring. We made the jokes about Schlegel, but Orlando knows who they are and they know what they're going to do in moments like this. And you have a choice of you can completely sort of try and lean away from it and let them do what they're going to do and try and find your own game. But I wouldn't say that there's a lot of people in this Columbus team that I thought would try and match it or bring it in their own way. And Aiden Morris did that. Now, he rode the line a little bit at times, sitting on a yellow card where it could have gotten dangerous, but he stepped up for that team. And I think on the counter press stuff, all of Columbus was good counter pressing. But I think Aiden Morris set that tone early of we've got numbers high and we're going to attack. And so no one for Orlando could pick their head up and find pieces. And then Duncan McGuire has to start dropping in even deeper to try and help out. And then he starts to make some mistakes in that area as well, because that's not where he's really comfortable. You also pull Orlando's team further deeper on the field. So you protect Rudy Camacho, who I thought was phenomenal in this game and is another example of Wilfred Nancy knows what he wants. And if he can find the players who have those attributes, he's going to put them in a position to win.
Can I give you another example of that? Diego Rossi instead of Lucas Zelarayán. Because if Zelarayán's in this team, do they press like that? Can they press like that?
No.
Not nearly as effectively.
No.
Certainly not.
Now it would be different where he can help break down.
Yeah, he has a level of control and manipulation
but
on the
what's
ball.
What's amazing,
Rossi does that.
Yeah, but what's amazing with Rossi and this team is you will sit in for 80% of the game. The 20% you have the ball, you're susceptible to the counter, because if you make a single mistake in possession, it's through Cucho's feet into Rossi, and it was what led to the red card. Was Rossi's ability to stretch the field, and you know, with Matan, maybe at times it gets a little convoluted. The three of them all sort of wanting to drop in and find the ball in spaces. I thought there was a little bit too much crewness around the box of like,
they got too crewy.
There are 21 players around the 18. At some point, someone has to shoot or put a cross in or try and take someone to the end line.
Crew versus Houston dream MLS Cup matchup.
There will be one shot taken, but it will be the best soccer that's ever been played across the field. But yeah, Aiden Morris was unbelievable in this game. You know what you're going to get from Nagby. And so he's sort of in that midfield. He's the decider. If he elevates his game, they're here. If he doesn't, they're down here, because Nagby's kind of always going to give you the same performance, except for the two goals he'll score every year from distance that are stunners.
Credit to, obviously, Cincinnati. We talked about Celentano and these young players that they have sort of allowed to develop and mature. Credit to Wilfred Nancy for Patrick Schulte as well. Made the decision, Eli Room, that's not my guy. Schulte, a GA, but he won MLS Next Pro Cup last year, didn't really play, comes in, is the every game starter this year, and there have been times where he has been shaky, especially on balls in the air where he has to control his area.
Yeah.
It's been an issue. There's no doubt about it. They've dropped a ton of points, not just because of defensive errors, but also goalkeeping errors.
Literally the regular season game against Orlando, the 4-3 comeback, that last goal is Schulte coming off his line.
He's waving.
Getting completely lost, yeah. And it was Ramiro Henrique putting it away, and that was a disaster.
Oh, by the way, official. Lucho is MVP.
Yeah. We could have pretended that it was already announced.
I mean, what are they doing? Yeah, what are they doing in Cincinnati? But you know what? That would be pulling the wool over our listeners' eyes.
We would never do that.
Never. But look, he was doing nothing for 90 minutes because Orlando didn't create a shot on goal in 90 minutes, basically. They were doing the RSL bit. And then in extra time, and he had to step up. And he answered the bell every single time.
And playing 10v11, Orlando found the gas, and they were awesome in extra time. Like, they were really, really good. And part of it was, I think, naturally teams sort of let their foot off the gas if they take a lead and you're up a man. We see it happen all the time across leagues. It was a little surprising how much Orlando were able to put Columbus under the gun at that point. And I think it really frustrated some Orlando fans that I saw in my timeline, because it's like, where was that for the first 90
minutes? Yeah, Orlando fans, if you're upset and you're looking for someone to talk this out with, just search hashtag DTITD on Twitter, and you can go back to 2016, 17, 18, 19, and you can watch what Dallas fans said at the end of the season, which is too little, too late, but oh, maybe there's a glimmer there. And that's another conversation we have to have, which is Oscar Preah. It has become very similar every time his team is in an MLS playoff game.
Yeah, I think that, like, first of all, this is now 9 trips to the playoffs for Oscar Preah without an MLS Cup appearance, which is the most in MLS history for any head coach.
Which has its positive and negative in there.
Yeah, he gets you to the playoffs every year. 63 points, league record for, or team record for points and wins and goal differential, tied the team record for goals scored, except when they set that record, I think it was in 16, they scored 55 goals. They gave up 72. This year, they gave up 39, right? So, like, there's a pretty big difference in that he develops his young players. They did win a trophy last year. They're into CONCACAF Champions League, well, Champions Cup next year, second year in a row. This has all the hallmarks of a team that is achieving not just, like, pretty goodness, but actual excellence. And gosh, it would be nice to see Pareja not have them come out tight and defensive in a big game, because I think they could have gone toe-to-toe with this Columbus team with the ball. Go ahead.
No, I will say the one thing that I agree with everything you said, and obviously we spent last show yelling about what they should do and what they would do, and it's what they did. I thought that they had some good ideas. I thought the pressing triggers were right. They closed down Marrera. They had the line of confrontation was actually a little bit higher than I expected out the gates. It was just past midfield. They had a clear idea of trying to push the ball to the left of Columbus. They had a clear idea that Marrera was susceptible both in and out of possession, and that maybe Farsi wasn't going to be the option that he could use. And it worked at times for the first 15, 20 minutes. But it was not a home team dominant MLS performance. Like, we're talking about in the margins of there was good little stuff there, and they could have won this game. They lost in extra time. Like, they were there.
Yeah.
They could have won this game. nothing about it was any different than it has been for Oscar Pereira's team in those nine
until it got to
and then there's nothing to lose. You have to right. The talent is there is sort of the frustrating part.
If you're going to control with the ball at all against any team, crew, whatever, Mauricio Pereira and Facundo Torres have to be more than anonymous.
Yeah, they were not.
Like Mauricio Pereira against Nashville, and I understand Nashville's got a completely different game model. They're giving you more space to play with. He could get on the ball. He advanced them up the field. He was at his, I think, his best in some of those matches, even though Orlando didn't blow him out. He was not on the ball in dangerous positions. He was not able to manipulate space at all, not able to create combinations the way he is at his best. And Facundo Torres, where you at, bro? How do they even get him on the ball in dangerous spots? Like, part of that's on the system, but part of that's on him, too. I did not see it from him in this game.
No, Angulo was the best player on the field.
Has been the most effective and dangerous for a while.
And I was a little surprised maybe they didn't flip Torres and Angulo.
They did.
But like, very late on.
No. They did within the first 20, 25 minutes.
Okay, yes. But like, it felt like the clear idea was they thought Moreira was a weak spot. Although Yaya Boa is.
That's what I would.
It is a miracle that Yaya Boa is on the field. Yeah. But you don't want Facu Torres that far wide.
Right.
So Yaya Boa is not the space Facu Torres should be. It is the space Ivan Angulo takes. And Angulo makes pretty good runs through the line.
I agree with that. But like, in theory, but the way it played out, as soon as they made that switch with Torres going to the left and Angulo going to, like, the game just tilted completely in Columbus's favor.
Yep.
For whatever reason, and I haven't gone back and rewatched it, so I can't pick apart the intricacies.
Amundsen was really good in this game, too.
Yeah, which is, like, he's been really good the entire second half of the year, which is, again, more credit to Wilfred Nancy. Anyway, to bring it back to Oscar Pereja, he's out of contract. And we know we've talked about this, and we've talked about Luis Muzy and Ricardo Moreira, the GM and technical director. They're heading into option years. I still think there is zero question you bring back that entire front office and staff, and you already have an open DP slot. Like, there are rumors out there that there's going to be a fourth DP added, and salary cap. Even without that, Orlando City have the ability to go out and get a match-winning number 10. And that's what they need to do. They need to go out and get their own Lucho Acosta or Thiago Almada or Hany Mukhtar or Carlos Gil, because the Delta, like, Mauricio Pereira is a very good player and they should keep him because they need, again, a regular season innings eater. But like, they need a match winner in the biggest games. They need someone who could be the best player on the field in four straight playoff games. They don't have that in this team. And the one time I think that Oscar Pereja had that was with 2016 FC Dallas.
Say his name.
And they won the double.
Say his name.
He might be available.
And do you remember what Mauro Diaz did in the US Open Cup final? That, like, he had, I think, a goal and three assists in a 4-2, and he was just magnificent. And he was the best 10 in the league that year. And they played like it. And they didn't come out tight in big games because Oscar Pereja, I think, had the trust that, like, if there's a special moment to make a special play, my guy's going to make it.
This is for you, for your...
Is this the Martin Ojeda?
No.
Because I was going to say, speaking of DPs, to have a DP signing who
I thought Martin Ojeda was fine for his first year.
And he'll be better next year.
And like, if they sell Facu Torres, it's plug and play.
No, I get it. But you went out and spent a club record fee?
Yeah, but this was what I said about young players.
But he's not young.
Well, fine, but he's...
23.
Yeah, and he's coming to a new country for the first time, and he's coming to a new league. This is for you, because you need
he's 25.
Oh.
Well,
he was 23 at one point.
Correct.
I can't sit here and listen to with you calling Celentano 22 and he's 23 and then Mosquera 21. Yes. Nobody can come at me on ages today. Nobody.
But this is for you so that you have something to, you know, talk about online all off season while you're supposed to be at home with your family.
Today's his birthday. He just turned 25.
Justice.
So they signed him at 23.
Nailed it.
He played this year at 24.
How old is he? Do you tell me how many years?
Eject Weeby from the show. Maria, get in here and drag him out.
He's 24. He's a record signing. Impact a playoff game.
Someone who's smarter than me, I looked at the numbers, so not me. Their XG goal differential was eighth in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah.
Orlando. They overperformed massively throughout the regular season. It is on par with what Austin did last year.
Oh,
so for your lovers of the regression and all that stuff, there are some false numbers in there, and
regression
there's a question
to recession.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And there's and your question soft would landing. Be, I think Oscar Preah is one of the floor raisers in Major League Soccer. He goes to the playoffs 9 times because he makes the playoffs every single year. He has not been a ceiling raiser. And if you're going to spend big on the number 10, I think it's fair to ask the question if he's the guy that you spend it under and if he's the guy you let make the decision.
I agree with that. I think it would be crazy to walk away from Oscar because it's not like a zero-sum equation. You've got to hire somebody else, and they have to succeed at least that level and elevate. But I can understand how new ownership and the Wolves, who are saying, we want to put a bunch of money into this, might say, we want our guy. We want to change the way things are because we want, at home, in a playoff game, go to the conference final where we could potentially host it or host MLS Cup down the line for our team to generate goal-scoring opportunities in 90 minutes.
And it's fair to say that if he plays to the level of his talent and you bring in a really talented player, they will play to that level, which will be above what they are, right? I'm not saying that he makes players worse or makes the game harder for his players, but I also don't know that he has shown a ton that he elevates them in big moments and in the playoffs.
He definitely has elevated a culture that was awash in losing and in, failed head coaches. So I do think it would be crazy for them to be like, hey, Oscar, you're gone. I would be shocked based on what the club was and what it's become. But I can also understand that feeling of like, huh, let's dream about that next step and whether or not...
Give him the number 10 first. Give him, let's see what this group can do if they're not balling on a budget next year, because they have the lowest payroll in MLS. Like, they have a lower payroll than the Colorado Rapids.
But that doesn't include transfer fees.
Okay.
I'm just saying they spent money. Cesar Araujo is a borderline Uruguayan they brought in as a U-20.
But Facundo
was he's an $8 or $9 million player from?
Okay, fine. But...
I was going to say,
they're still in the bottom quarter or the bottom quintile of MLS in terms of spend. And I'm not saying that they need to go out there and be Atlanta United when it comes to, or Toronto FC, but go spend $8 million or $10 million on a number 10 who could be in the best 11 discussion next year. Let's run it back with this group. Oscar Pereja is going to raise the floor with any group he coaches. And that's the difference between this year's Orlando and last year's Austin, because the defense is going to still be there for Orlando. They're going to give up 40 goals next year, no matter what happens with the attack. And that's because how Oscar Pereja teams exist. Get the player who can be the force magnifier for Ojeda and Angulo, and if Torres is still there, Torres and McGuire, and let's see what happens then.
Speaking of players that elevate, who win games sometimes on their own, oftentimes, in fact, Denny Bawanga. Let's go to the Western Conference. It's been an hour. We haven't talked about Denny Bawanga. That's because we get sidetracked, and that's why we like being on this show. Seattle at home, but Steve Cherundolo against Brian Schmetzer has been a losing proposition for the Sounders. Cherundolo hasn't lost to Schmetzer. Is it all time? Is that what it was? Certainly not this year.
You're in your own territory.
I'm stumbling about in the dark. LAFC go to Seattle, win 1-0. Denny Bawanga scores the goal. He is inevitable. 37 goals in all competitions. It is a vintage Denny Bawanga transitional play in the open field. Nobody can keep up with him. Nobody can step to him. When he gets his chance, he hits it 3,000 miles per hour into the side netting.
At full speed. That's what makes him great. That's what makes him unstoppable is what... I was thinking about it yesterday. It's Landon Donovan-esque in MLS of what he does at full speed clinically is unstoppable because everyone else has to slow down. So they give you a chance to catch them, or they're incapable of being clean in those moments. That finish is top level finish, and he's running at the fastest speed of anyone in that moment.
He gets on the ball, and you think that Andrade or maybe Alex Rodon has an angle to close him down, and Bawanga gets the ball. He's already going fast, and then he keeps going faster and faster.
Yaimar didn't even consider it.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't consider it for a second.
Well, Reagan didn't consider it, which I don't know. I think that's a tough moment because Olivero's on his shoulder. He doesn't know how close Nuhu is, but I also think he doesn't want to consider it. Because, what's he going to do? Close down Dennis Bawanga in the box?
For most players, he doesn't have to really make
someone's
going to
catch him. Yeah.
Catch him, or he just trusts that when you don't have that angle and you're at full speed, Steph Fry is going to make the save.
And it was just, it came at a moment, I laughed out loud. It came at a moment where LAFC wasn't in the game and they had no opportunities. And I think Seattle had shown up until that point, like, we're going to surround him with numbers. We're going to get numbers around him every time he touches the ball. That Yaimar over the course of the game was pretty close to him, to the point where Belonga started to swap wings and Olivero came out left and started to try and change the space a little bit to get Belonga a chance. But like, we've spent a month talking about, if you have the best player on the field, there's a really good chance you're going
to
win.
If you're organized and you have the best player on the field, like, you don't have to play beautiful soccer. Yeah. And they didn't. And they, like, Ryan Hollingshead came out afterwards.
Here's the quote. It's one of those games that you maybe don't want to have the whole season. You don't want to be that type of team. But in this sort of environment on the road with the team that's been struggling to score, it's the perfect way to play.
Hollingshead, I mean, Oscar Preah, by the way, has to, if he listened to that last segment, now he's going to this. He's like,
yeah,
give me Denny Belonga and I'm in the finals.
Get a Babello Reynoso. He's in the conference finals.
For sure.
Yeah. Yep.
Because that's what happened for Trundle. And that's for sort of the story with LAFC as well, which is Bob built one of the most beautiful teams we've seen in this league, set a points record, fun to watch, but folded in big moments where they couldn't be tough.
Well, Seattle did exactly this to LAFC 4 years ago. That beautiful 2019 LAFC team that still played, I think, the best soccer that I've ever seen in MLS. They go take a 1-0 lead over Seattle, and it didn't matter because in that game, the two best players on the field were Nico Ladero and Raul Ruiz Diaz. And like they didn't play beautiful soccer. The Seattle Sounders 2019. That was not like we weren't talking about that team. We were talking about the Columbus Crew, you know. Well, but they had the match winners.
Well, think about this year, 2023. Instead of Raul and Nico that you're asking to make big plays in big moments, you're asking Jordan Morris, who's probably going to have one, maybe two chances, had his one. Maxime Crepeau made a magnificent save. We can dig into that in a second. Leo Chu.
Yep.
Christian Roldan, who doesn't have a goal in 27 playoff appearances, now 28. Alex Roldan, Nuhu, Albert Roosta. It's just
they
not
have
the
a
same.
Lot of very good play, good to very good players on this roster, and one great player in João Paulo. And 2 years ago, when they won CCL, they had a lot of good to very good players, and four great players in João Paulo, the tail end of Stefan Fry's prime, and Nico Ladero and Raul Ruiz Diaz. And it's unfortunate for Seattle that those two guys hit the wall, lost the battle to Father Time in the same year. It doesn't, like, giving them the contracts that they gave them when they were given was 1,000% the correct call if you had to do it all over again. And this is not an unsuccessful season for Seattle. Like, they played really good soccer mostly throughout the year. They played very good soccer, I thought, in this game. They are set up to be a good team in the post-Nico Ladero era, which if you'd asked me that 2 years ago, I would have said, no, they're going to go straight into the toilet.
Yeah.
So, like, they checked a lot of boxes. But in games like this, how many times have we said over the past month and a half or however long the playoffs have been going on, like, sometimes in the playoffs, all you need is the best player on the field. That's what LAFC had.
And I think sometimes we lose sight of, like, this is arguably the best defense in the league, probably second right now, but still they're in that conversation. And that is,
This is a generationally good defense.
And that's the base now. And that's sort of the base in these games is like, well, can they score a goal because they don't concede? And that's what this team is built on. And I think Yaimar is elevated into a space where he's not Chad Marshall at his peak, but you lost Chad Marshall. And it was like there was an assumption Seattle would continue to push on. And they did well. Kim Ki-hee filled in and helped them win an MLS Cup. And then Yaimar has now stepped into that spot. And when you talk about this season, the elevation of Jackson Reagan, who is now a legitimate MLS starter alongside him and is a part of that core. I think Reed Baker-Whiting coming through.
And Atencio.
And Atencio. That is like the gold of this season, which is going forward, all of those players are manageable contracts under control. A lot of them are locals that might want to be there for a while. And like, that's your team. You add Christian to that, hopefully for his whole career, and Jordan Morris probably as well. Then you have a space where you can say, these are the DPs that fit because everything else is already built and we can sort of plop them straight in. But in this game, what we saw all year, which was an inability to create a ton of high-level chances against a set defense, especially at home, and Jordan Morris's inability to finish his one chance. If he finishes that chance on a breakaway, and we've all argued what we thought he should do with it, which also shows the options that are there, besides the one he chose, which is to shoot as Crapo comes at him.
To be fair to him, he is really, really good at that exact finish. We have seen him finish that chance a million times, both with the Sounders and with the U.S. national team. I thought Crapo makes a great save on it.
Yeah.
But that is really the only finish in Jordan Morris's bag on those breakaways.
If he goes to his, I think if he pushes to his left foot, he's past
the Landon Donovan.
He's past the standing goalkeeper and he rolls it in.
Flip your hips to the right and then you drag to the left.
Honestly, at the speed Jordan Morris is going, he may not even have to do that. Yeah. Because I think Crapo has said himself when he comes out that it's just continuing your momentum.
So, and I think,
and then Chiellini has to make a goal line.
I think that once Crapo is coming out and Crapo is shading to his right, so Jordan Morris is left, I think Morris takes a touch back to your right across Chiellini. At worst, you get taken down and it's a dog so, and you get red card for an opposing center back. At best, you score, and in between, you draw a penalty kick.
I get all the debate here. I understand that, especially since it was saved, Sounders fans, all of us want something different to happen for Jordan Morris, but this is the conundrum, right? We're debating like one play and then four or five long distance shots that Maxime Crapo makes incredible saves on, or saves he should make, like on the Atencio one, or Rusnak hits the post.
Or Jaimar doesn't get all of it on a remarkably similar chance to the one Jerson Mascara had.
If Jordan's playing on the left, he's running in behind much more. He's creating chances and space for a center forward, like, say, Prime Rui Diaz, who would have finished that chance more than likely in a playoff scenario.
But there isn't... just to say, Morris on the left, I don't think solves a lot of the problems in this game, which is they still struggle to break down teams in a low block, and LAFC wasn't really going to give them the space to run in. So I don't know that changes a ton in this game.
It's more about the gain, I would say, from having a center forward who's more of a finisher.
And a second option on crosses. That's what I thought was really is frustrating about Seattle, is they pumped in crosses for 65 minutes to just Jordan Morris.
Yeah.
There was not a single other option in the box. He's not going to win that. He's not even supposed to win that. And even if he does win it and it's not a shot on goal, there's no one there for the second ball until Rui Diaz comes on the field for one cross. And then Rui Diaz goes out left and he starts whipping in crosses, which made no sense. And I think sort of came to the fact of like, they hadn't really played together over the course of the year. It isn't super cohesive, which is odd considering the history that a lot of these players have. And the reason Rui Diaz and Nico Ladero probably weren't on the field is because they haven't played a lot this year. They're not sharp. They haven't been healthy. They have not played 90 minutes.
They haven't played well.
So they kind of, as much as we can complain, and I think we talked about Nico Ladero starting in this game, and I know Anders' complaint is that he didn't come off the bench at halftime, which I can understand. I don't know that it's all a solution. You are a half bounce away. You lost 1-0 at home to the Golden Boot leader who scored an unbelievable goal. Like, you are not far off, and they were not outclassed. There were small decisions that could have changed. Set piece service was horrendous. That's a spot where in a big playoff game, Seattle has in the past been really dangerous and been able to sneak through games and sneak through wins. But it's the same thing we saw against Dallas. It's the same thing we saw on decision day. It's the same thing we saw over the course of large stretches of the summer. So this has been Seattle's story this year.
This team was good enough to win MLS Cup. They were just going to have to do it on really tight margins, particularly in their opponent's final third.
Yep. And the difference is Jordan Morris is a good to very good MLS attacker, and Dennis Bouanga is having like one of the greatest years.
And that shouldn't be the comp, right? It should be Morris against Olivero, because your DP should be equal to Bouanga.
I was just going to say, well, that's the difference in this game is
Olivero. And the difference in the roster is that the Sounders have two DPs who they have to carry at this. Well, not at this point, because Nico Ladero he's officially done as a Sounder, and it's the end of an incredibly great era. He has a place in the inner circle of the best and most important signings in MLS history, full stop. But he was not an asset in this playoff run. Same with Raul Ruiz Diaz, all of the above. And Albert Rusnak's a good player, but I think you said we'd be in the group chat. He's like 0.5 DP. He's not even a full DP.
He occupies the spot so that you can open up but 22 spots. And that's where Leo Chu's supposed to make a difference. Right, and they gave him time to develop. And he was not the guy that they needed to be in this game. And there were only a few times this year he was. And when he was, guess who was dominant?
Yeah. Jordan Morris.
Jordan Morris was
because
dominant.
It meant they were both out on the run. And what we saw in this game is that Leo Chu's skill set, what we saw this year, is that Leo Chu's skill set is kind of at odds with the Sounders game model. And when they go out on the market this year, and it is a huge offseason for this team, replacing Nico Ladero and trying to stay among the best in the Western Conference, in the league, I don't think they're going to go out and think like for like with Nico Ladero. I think they're going to go out because Brian Schmetzer wants to stay in a 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1, wants to play with wingers, doesn't want to go back to the 3-5-2 that they used so effectively in 2021 that I think with this personnel is actually their best bet. But they want to still stay in that 4-2-3-1 or 4-3-3. I think they're going to go out and get a winger, and I think that's what they need. I think they need a... Sorry, Maria's suggesting Pumas players.
And, nice.
And, yeah. I think they need to go out and get a left winger who can beat a guy off the dribble and then either be goal dangerous or provide the final ball. Like they need to add that to, and it's like, it's not going to be a Bowanga level success.
Ignacio Piatti, where are you?
Right. No, but like that type of player is what the Sounders, I think, will be looking for. And just for the sake of Anders sanity, I hope it's someone that they could get.
One of the things I'll throw in is Seattle has work to do, and because they won't sell a Nico Ladero, they're not going to get money back in to sort of respend, so it'll be a question of spending. My notes have that Yaimar and Leo Chu are the only two internationals on this roster, though. I think they traded two international spots this year because they don't use them, and I don't know if Leo Chu will be back on the team. I'm curious if they sort of shop around in MLS for teams that are trying to dump international players.
It's a really good show
that they can get off of. And they historically have leaned into MLS veterans, and they've been able to refurbish players in MLS on their team. They tried it with Eber last year. It didn't work, but we're talking at a higher level. But in my idea, Portland would be a really good match for this because Phil Neville's coming in. They've obviously got a ton of international attacking players, a Santi Moreno, a Jimmy Chara, guys like that. But whatever it is, I wouldn't be shocked if Seattle did some work inside of the league to try and bring another piece in. They do need to go out and replace some big players, though, and they have to do it in a way that they haven't done it in 10 plus years. Rusnak was also a continuation signing.
Yep.
He was, let's not stir too much because we don't want to throw Ladero off. We don't want to change Morris and Roldan's roles. And they won CCL because of it, which was worth it. And they had another bounce back year this year. We talked about it. The core is strong. The spine is strong. The back line is really strong. But they have to go and acquire a player in a way they haven't had to do in about 10 years.
I've been spending a lot of this conversation, one, listening, but two, looking up the transfer fee of Christian Oliveira. How much did they pay Almeria for him, LAFC? Because I'm thinking about the transfer policies of that club versus the Sounders, what they have to spend, what they have spent, even on players that aren't guaranteed.
LAFC operates in a different space because of the way they've moved players. So.
I agree, but I think they would otherwise too. Like just maybe, but the spend.
But off the original spend with selling Diego Rossi and moving out to West and whatever, there's like money that exists for them that they quickly, with guys like Brian Rodriguez,
they
move in and out.
They sold Chicho as
well. Exactly. Yep. That they've moved around that other teams don't really operate.
Either way, I just want to give credit to Oliveira because we're talking about the comparison between Chu and Oliveira and how they compare. Oliveira has been very good, if not score sheet impressive so far for LAFC. But the moment that opens up everything for Bowanga and understanding who you play with, who butters the bread, Oliveira could try to pick up that pass from Tillman. He deeks, he dummies, he takes Yaimar with him. He makes the run that holds Reagan partially. He does all the things to make Denny Bowanga's moment his moment. Yeah. And it was a really fun, off-the-ball, young player doing something that most people aren't going to pick out because it's not a goal or an assist, but makes the game-winning goal in an MLS playoff game.
And he comes to the left side as well. So it forces a little bit of a shift in movement for the Seattle backline. Alex Roldan gets caught up field, which was the big fear coming into the game. I thought Alex Roldan struggled over the course of the game, both in and out of possession. But it's a huge moment. And then also credit with LAFC of they brought in Tillman and he did the job for them. He gets the assist, but Tillman, Acosta, and Ilya, they work so hard in central midfield, and they make it tough for you to play through, and they're clean enough in their first pass out that, one, they can unleash Bulanga, and two, they don't put themselves in situations where they get counter-pressed, and now you get an opening. And with their lines pretty set, there wasn't a lot of movement for Seattle to get through, and so LAFC went and did the job. And from what Ryan Hollings had said, it's not fun, but they did it well. You have to at least execute in what you choose to do. They did that at a high level. It'll be a little bit of a different test with Houston at home, although maybe not, because Houston doesn't really have a choice of the way they want to play.
Houston has won both meetings, I think, against LAFC this year.
They smoked LAFC.
Yeah, Dynamo 1-0 winners against Sporting Kansas City. Apologies. Dolly Dynamo, big, we're all about the orange here. This is late in the show that we're getting to you. That makes me sad. Unfortunately, we do have to start with the controversy here. Alberto Lopez via email, quote, "Why is Weeby giving out red cards for having your arm naturally beside your body? No handball was the right call." Of course, Alberto is talking about the Eric Sviatchenko and Daniel Shallowy play. After the Dynamo had gone up 1-0 via that Franco Escobar header off the set piece from Aceh, did you know he took that with his left foot? There was an opportunity for Daniel Shallowy, and no goalkeeper. It's kind of scrambling around in the box. Shallowy shoots. Sviatchenko is on the line. The ball hits Sviatchenko, does not go into the goal. Is there any debate in your guys' eyes where the ball hits him?
No.
Clearly it hits his arm, but do you think, because this would change my interpretation, I have, my opinion is handball. But if it hits him in the torso first, I don't think you can say it's deliberate at that point. Do you think it hit him in the torso?
I thought it did, but I would die on that hill.
It was hard to tell. Johnny
How
Russell
many hills
said,
would you?
Yeah,
not a lot. No, yeah.
Johnny Russell said afterwards that the referee, Guido Gonzalez Jr., told him, and look, this is through the grapevine, so take it for what it's worth, that he had the ball hitting torso. Watching the replays, I can't tell you 100% what happened. It doesn't feel to me like it hits torso, just based on the trajectory and the force with which it hits the arm. The giveaway angle for me is behind the goal through the net, and you can see Sviatchenko plant the right foot. He sees Shallowy's going to shoot. He pushes to the left. His left arm extends out, and as the shot comes in, that arm comes inside. Do I think it's deliberate in the sense of a Luis Suarez in the World Cup off the line against Ghana? No. Not a chance. But does he know what he's doing with his intent to block the ball, bringing his arm in to where the ball's flight is? That, I think, for me is enough for a deliberate handball, and I would have liked to see handball called. Now, if it's called, it's also a red card for Dogso. So it's a huge play, and Gonzalez doesn't call the handball on the field. It goes to Carol Ann Chouinard in the VAR booth. It has to be clear and obvious, and that's where it gets complicated, because this is not an unnatural position situation. That arm is by the body. You would say that's in the silhouette. It wouldn't be unnatural, so it has to be deliberate. So is it deliberate for you guys?
I fall with the same as the Ian Murphy play, which, one, is whatever was called on the field, there's no clear and obvious to overturn. So I think it was all handled the correct way, and I can't tell that Sviatchenko is making his body bigger, because the other part about going to your left to make the save is you are sort of...
Well, it doesn't have to be making your body bigger in this case. That would be unnatural position. It is, did you move your hand or arm toward the ball?
But I think he's moving it towards his body so that he can put his body in front in a flat surface.
I think I understand what you're saying, but I don't think he's tucking. I think
But he's bringing his arm back in. Yeah,
this debate sort of tells you the situation Carol Ann Chouinard was in, which is like, impossible.
I don't think there's any evidence on the video that there was a clear and obvious error made in the initial call. So you have to then go back to the call on the field, which is on the referee, which it's what you ask for.
And if he saw it hit torso, then for me, it's not deliberate. If it hits torso first, then that's where the block occurred.
Yeah, I don't see that on the video.
I don't either, but it's grainy. It's not perfect. I don't know. Doyle's not interested in this, and because
I think the Philly game's a little bit different, but like, SKC did not deserve to win this game.
No.
And that was the one moment they had off the kickoff from Houston's goal. But I didn't think SKC could go in and defend deep and keep things like close, which they did, to their credit. They defended pretty well for the most part. They give up a goal on a set piece, which is a little unfortunate for them because Houston's pulling them apart in the run of play, but Houston doesn't score off that. But what I think happened, and it's something we've seen over the years with Peter Vermes, is a lack of balance, which is when they defend with numbers, they cannot generate attack. And when they generate attack and have numbers going forward, they cannot close things down. And that lack of ability to play both ways is where they are at a disadvantage. They made the decision or not, whether Houston just inflicted it on them. I think Houston had 77% possession in the first 15 minutes of this game. So Houston decided what they were going to do. SKC's inability to attack in any way and play both ways is why they're going home.
And yet they still had their chances.
Yeah, Daniel Shalvey's chance was a great chance.
Polito had a late one.
The Polito ones are the ones that got to rankle you if you're a Kansas City fan.
Well, especially the breakaway.
Yeah.
It's just you got to be so frustrated. Like, this is the entire point of not just signing Polito in the first place and spending the transfer fee, again, record for your club, but re-signing him this year. Those are the moments.
Yeah.
In the playoffs, your DP9, a one-goal game, I hate that analysis and I hate being the person like, he has to finish that. But
at least Willie Agata and put your shot on target.
Yeah, that was, we come full circle right there, didn't we?
The Houston Dynamo play the most beautiful, intricate midfield soccer
fun
in the entire freaking world.
They were feeling it.
I was glad, Weeby, you said at the start of the show, you said tiki taka. Because I've been afraid to make that point, but I like watching that game last night. Just like the short little passes,
and licks. It's the comfort. It's the belief. It's the trust. It's the confidence.
So
this is the Dynamo,
right? It's amazing. And one of the things that I notice about their patterns of play, and they don't really have patterns of play. They've talked about
see them talking on the field, refiguring it out as the game went along.
So our friend John Mueller from The Athletic did a great article about a year ago on the Airbnbification of Barcelona style. And the idea is that everyone saw what worked so well for Barcelona, the Pep era, and has tried to imitate that and have become a sort of commodified lesser version of it, even including Pep's Manchester City, except it's not really the same thing. And the difference is in, like, think of players as A, B, C, D. Barcelona during that era had a pattern of midfield play where it would be A, B, A, C, where they were quick little passes to create different lanes and different pockets of space that even the best teams don't really do that anymore. And mostly it's because Xavi and Iniesta and Busquets at their peak you cannot imitate that.
But I mean, Bossy.
I was going to say, follow that with what I think Artur, you might be following that with.
And Ace. And Coco Carrasquilla coming inside, and I mean, I was counting the ABAC patterns last night. Nice. I want a fantasy soccer game where my team scores points not for goals or saves, but for ABAC patterns in midfield. And the Dynamo did it 1,000 freaking times in this game, and again, watching that game with Kalen was a special moment for me. Nice. To see that much joy in that man's face. I wish you had been there.
I think it would be huge for Adidas if Houston and Columbus make MLS Cup, because they'd bring two balls and they just both play their own game in possession.
And it could be like one of those great old commercials that used to happen. Yeah, no, for sure.
Yeah, it was special. It was fun.
It would be, what is it? Ben plus 10? Were those the Elches? Like Sergio plus 10? It was like...
Oh, yeah. Where they'd bring in like Platini and LA on their team. Yeah, good stuff. But we don't need that, because you've got Griffin Dorsey and Coco Carrasquilla and Nelson Quiñones.
I can't believe how much I love watching the Houston Dynamo.
By the way, this was a pure Nelson Quiñones game where it was like, oh my God, this dude can... He can hose people off the dribble. He's so quick. And it's like, God, just give me like
the
18
wrong
inches.
Decision
just give me 18
every
inches
single time with the final ball.
Yeah. This way on the shot. Or like, he's so close. But I want him to find that. Are Houston a true MLS Cup contender, Dave?
I think it's disrespectful to ask that question.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. And I think it's unnecessary because they're in
Steve
the
Clark agrees with you.
Yeah, because they're in the conference finals. They're here. They've won US Open Cup. They're here. Right. I think from the start of the playoffs till now, and probably more the month going into the playoffs, it was like, will it work in the playoffs? Will it not? They've won two playoff series. They're in the conference finals. They are the fourth option left because they won't play a home game. They cannot play a home game. So they are least favorite of the four teams left. That's not like a disrespectful thing. That's just MLS home teams win, and that's the reality of the way it's set up. But they've done all the things. This year, not only has it been a success, which we could have already said, even going into the postseason, having won the U.S. Open Cup, you're in CONCACAF next year, you've rehabilitated Ace Ace to be the player you wanted, you've got a new culture under Ben Olsen, you've got a lot of cornerstone pieces that will probably be there for the future, and you can start to add to it as you go forward. You're in the conference finals. Like, you have reached the point. You are one of the four best teams in MLS. You've won a trophy, so you are one of three teams in MLS that has won a trophy, right? Because no one won CCL.
Right.
I guess Canadian four. Championship. Yeah. Four.
Wow, Voyagers Cup eraser.
Yeah. So you're one of or those D-Hot teams.
And the Voyagers Cup.
You're one of those few Shocker. Teams. If Cincinnati does not win MLS Cup, you arguably had the best season of any team. Right? You've won a trophy. You make it to a semifinal. If they make
you
the final.
It, yeah, if you do a double, yeah.
So they are in this space that very few teams ever get into. And they're in a space that no other team is in this year. So I think asking the, like, can they, should they, would they, is a waste of time now because they're there. Are they favorites against LAFC? No. And there are holes in their game, and you saw it at the end against SKC. Similar, I think, to what Columbus's inability to close out the game. Now, Houston's was a little bit more finishing.
We saw it twice against RSL.
For sure. But they're here.
No, for sure. Because they play the best soccer through midfield. They have a really good center back pairing in Mikhail, which I did not see coming, and Sviatchenko. I think Sviatchenko is really helpful.
Credit to Pat Onsat as well as this staff. Mikhail was supposed to be, he was like a depth piece.
Yeah.
Like, what's he going to be? He's an MLS Next Pro player. Does he have the chops to play at this level?
Calm, playing out of the back.
Did you see the back heel
times?
Off?
Oh my God.
Johnny Russell for just like, oh yeah, I'm just going to do this. No worries. Sviatchenko could have been washed.
Yep.
Turned into a great signing.
Steve Clark. Still excellent. He had a great save early on in this one. They check a lot of boxes. They had two 1-1 draws against RSL, and they had a 1-0 in this one that, like, they had a couple of really close calls, including the no call on the handball. And to get back to Quiñones, yeah, he gets in isolation. He beats a guy 1v1. He hits the wrong pass every single time for the final ball. And we saw it in the first, like, go back and watch the first 30 minutes of this game. He hits a cutback. He gets to the end line. He hits a cutback to nobody time after time after time. So Corey Barrett finally, after 20, 30 minutes, starts changing his run. And he drifts out to where those cutbacks are happening. And now Quiñones is like hitting it low and hard across the
just
sit.
Just
or like
make the wrong run, Corey.
Although it was his shot that Melia's save went into Baird's feet that he should have finished, right?
Right.
He had another one where he cut inside that was very close.
No, but I'm saying Corey Barrett should put that away.
Absolutely, but that's the other thing, right? Yeah, I'm not just blaming Quiñones. It's also like Corey Barrett's had a really good season, 14 goals, 8 assists across all competitions. Has like he's going to be, I think, one of the coveted free agents this offseason. Look at the top goal scorers on the other teams. Remain like Cucho, Bawang.
No, I know. And I sat in this chair and I said that would be the difference in why Kansas City would win.
Yeah.
Yeah, you did.
But to your point, Dave.
You were wrong.
I was wrong.
And wrong.
They're here.
They showed in this game. I'm going to say the exact same thing I said after the RSL series. They showed in this game exactly why they're here and exactly why they're still a long shot to win MLS Cup. They just don't have the firepower. But God, that midfield.
Oh, it's so fun. It is so fun. Anything to add here? We've covered a lot of ground.
Our tour for the U.S. men's national team just hit the inbox this morning that the U.S. is going to have a Camp Cupcake friendly against Slovenia on January 20th. Our tour's got his U.S. citizenship. He was awesome in this game again. And remember, when he came to MLS, Greg Berhalter was his head coach, and Greg Berhalter was the one who said after like one practice, let's get you on the track to American citizenship.
Conference finals, Saturday, 6 p.m. is the kick time for Cincy Columbus. Coverage on MLS Season Pass at 5:30.
A Houston friend sent me an article that was Ben Olsen, D'Amico Ryans, and Ime Udoka, the three new coaches in Houston changing Houston sports.
Sick.
He's on the level.
Sick.
Yeah.
LAFC Houston, 9:30. coverage at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, right after that Cincy Columbus game. I'm just sitting here staring at pictures of Lucho Acosta crying on the field with his wife and children. Nice. What an emotional time to be a supporter of this league in FC Cincinnati. We might be in Cincinnati on December 9th for MLS Cup. We might be in Columbus. Either way, I haven't seen a game at either of those stadiums, but I know there'll be a march that I can mix into on the way there. All right, guys. Anything left? Yes, no, maybe?
No, I would throw out there, it was a fun weekend. Single elimination is fun. It was 3-1-0s and an extra time that went to 2-0. In the first round, three-game series, there was 4-1-0s in total over the course of the entire round. I'm just saying, fan of the format.
Nice. I'll have to resist biting on that one. It's a trap. Adios, everybody. Have a great week. We'll see you on Thursday. We'll be right back.